Welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear real people sharing their true stories of what it was like to go over the edge and find their way back. And now, Steppin' Out.
Now, once again, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out. And next up, we got Matt. How you doing, Matt?
Good. How you doing, everybody? I'm Matt, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Hello, Matt.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Matt.
And I guess, you know, just like you had asked Jim, you know, what, you know, I'll tell you and share a little bit with you, you know, what brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous.
Please do.
And, you know, just kind of what brings us here to the station. You know, the, you know, part of our program is to try and, you know, help others, you know, try and recover from the disease of alcoholism. And, you know, like you were saying, Drew, if there's one person who identifies with either Jim or I are sharing tonight, you know, I do hope you reach out to AA and, you know, you can find the, you know, salvation from the insanity of drinking that, you know, we have and plenty of others have.
Mm. Now, you started pretty young, didn't you?
Yes, actually. I got sober when I was 19 years old.
Wow, that's amazing. How old are you now?
I will be 28 this year. So, I God willing and the creeks don't rise, in 2 weeks I will have 8 years of continuous sobriety.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, let me bring you back to 19, or at least the year before then, and tell me a little bit about what it was like. And, you know, what was it that prompted you to reach out for help?
Well, I guess what prompted me to reach out for help, you know, was, you know, more or less, you know, like I had said, you know, before, you know, I had had enough with the insanity of drinking. You know, I come from a very large, you know, alcoholic family, you know, and, you know, the joke I often use in my family, you know, either you're A, going to be alcoholic, or B, you're going to marry one. You know, there's very little middle ground.
Okay.
And, you know, so my entire life I've been exposed to alcoholics and alcoholism, and I always saw it as, you know, socially acceptable, you know, as a kid, you know, because, I mean, you know, when you got an uncle and aunt or, you know, even like a parent, you know, who's getting, you know, fall down drunk and nobody around them is, you know, perturbed by it, you know, you kind of see it as acceptable and not out of the ordinary,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I just saw that that was the way that, you know, people drink, you know, and people who, you know, just have one or two drinks, you know, or are able to moderate, you know, in my opinion, you know, that's alcohol abuse because you're neglecting it, you know, and it's unordinary. And, you know, pretty much, you know, and actually I should say, you know, I did because in the beginning, you know, when I first, you know, had a little bit of alcohol coming from an alcoholic background, you know, I did not want to be an alcoholic. You know?
Okay.
If you asked me, you know, at a young age, you know, are you ever going to be an alcoholic or, you know, do you think you'll be an alcoholic? I would have told you outright no, you know, because, you know, before I started drinking, even while I was drinking, I was under the impression that I could control the fact of whether or not that I was an alcoholic.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, I dabbled in a little bit of, you know, other substances, you know, out of the desire not to be an alcoholic.
Like what?
You know, your marijuana, you know, a little bit of hash here and there, you know, but pretty much, you know, I was looking for anything and everything that you would put in front of me, you know, to not feel the way I was feeling inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just, you know, I always felt less than and not as good as anybody else and everybody else around me. You know, and, you know, when I found marijuana, you know, and later when I found, you know, alcohol full time, you know, that feeling inside would be gone. You know, like Jim had mentioned earlier, you know, that feeling of discomfort would leave. And instead I would get a sense of ease and comfort, you know, it would slip in. And all of a sudden, you know, I would feel like, you know, like the guys wanted to hang out with me and all the gals wanted me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, choosing between the two, who would not want to feel, you know, the latter? You know, who wouldn't want to feel better?
Well, let me ask you. I mean, like, there must have been a point where there was some magic in the bottle, or else there wouldn't have been this whole obsession with it, right?
Oh, yeah. The magic in the bottle was it would totally change, you know, my mindset of, you know, reality and the way I perceived it.
Okay.
You know, there's, what I've learned and what I've been told is that there's a point in alcoholism, you know, disease where you just lose control of how much you're going to drink and also whether you can control, you know, the amount you're going to drink, you know. And for me, that was the very first time that, you know, I actually drank, like, in excess.
Okay.
You know, I was drinking at a party, you know. And
what were you drinking?
Actually, I was a sissy. You know, I was drinking Zima.
You are a sissy, aren't you? You were drinking Zima?
I didn't like the taste of beer at the time.
Jim, hit him.
at the time, drinking was about taste. At the time. Because,
okay, you know, it's all right. I don't mean to call you a sissy, but I never got anybody in here that got drunk on Zima before, you know? I've heard all kinds of stuff from, like, Listerine, but Zima?
Yeah. Hey, you know? you'll do what it takes to get drunk, I assure you.
Apparently.
You know? And I was drinking it out of a glass because, you know, alcoholics, you know, drink out of bottles, but sophisticated people use glasses.
Okay.
You know, and, or so I thought, you know. And I was walking through this person's kitchen, and I dropped the glass on the floor, and it shattered, you know, and everybody at the party turned and looked at me. And the first thing that went through my mind was, I think I've had too much to drink, you know, which would be a normal thought. And normal people, when that thought crosses their mind, stop. You know, I've seen it done. I don't understand it, but I've seen it done.
Okay.
You know, but the very next thought that went through my mind was, who cares? And, mm-hmm. All I did was I picked up the shards of glass with my hand, you know, not very smart, you know, and then just said, well, I don't want to break another glass. So then I started drinking out of a bottle, you know.
And there you have it.
And, I capped off the evening by, you know, leaning up against a pine tree in a backyard, thrown up in the bushes and laying down, you know, in this person's backyard, which would probably not be a good idea because their backyard, you know, they were my next door neighbor. So it would not have been a good showcase for, you know, mom to walk out, you know, to turn a pool filter on in the morning and, you know, see me laying in the neighbor's backyard. Okay. So, you know, I ended the evening, you know, in stints. The first stint was crawling from the backyard into the den, passing out there for a little bit. And then, you know, when I came to, crawling up the stairs, passing out in the hallway, and then finally passing out in the bedroom.
Hmm.
You know, and that was the end of my first night of, like, getting drunk. And when I woke up the next morning, you know, it was, wow, wasn't that fun, you know? And, you know, I didn't like the puking part. That wasn't fun, you know. But the feeling of alcohol, that alcohol brought me, and, you know, the comfort and the enjoyment and stuff, you know, I would forever drink to try and find that comfort level just without the, you know, the bad effects that unfortunately came with it.
Okay.
You know. And then after that, you know, because, you know, I just, you know, I went away to college after that, and like I said earlier, you know, I was under the impression that I can control my drinking. You know, I found myself in a dry dorm, you know, and so I couldn't drink, you know, by choice. You know, again, I thought I had choice in the matter. And, you know, I didn't drink for 3 months. But, you know, having 8 years of sobriety, I look back at those 3 months and not drinking on my own willpower. First of all, you know, it's very long, you know. And I don't mean time-wise, just mean the duration of not drinking and, you know, feeling the way I felt without drinking, you know, for 3 months. You know, I know now all I was doing was just kind of putting off the next drink, you know, because it's not like I had made a promise I'm never going to drink again. It was just like, all right, let me cool my jets a little bit. You know, let me find a little period of abstention. And what I was doing was I was trying to figure out the system, you know. Who's going to tell on me if I drink while I'm underage in this dry dorm, you know, who's got drugs, you know, or, you know, what's the monitor's schedule so that, you know, if I do drink, how will he or she not, you know, catch me? You know, I was just trying to figure out the system,
but
so that I could drink the way I wanted to drink again without the repercussions.
It doesn't sound like you're having much fun. It sounded like it was a little on the sloppy side, if I'm hearing you correctly. Right?
As far as my drinking goes, yes.
And you just cop to being a Zima drunk on national radio, okay? That's a first for us. I've heard Windex. I've heard everything but Zima. But that was your first rip-roaring drunk on Zima, all right? And so, I mean, what happens now?
Well, I think it's all downhill from Zima.
Yeah, apparently, yeah. You know?
No, what happens from there is, like I said, I was you know, away at college, 3 months of not drinking, and then I finally figured out the system.
Okay.
I knew who wouldn't tell, who would tell, who to stay away from, who not to get near, you know, and more importantly, who had the fake ID.
Oh, there you go.
You know.
Okay.
The most important guy in the dorm. Unfortunately, one night that I was going, you know, I woke up one morning after heavy drinking, hangover, made the promise to myself, I am not going to drink today. I have made a decision and a choice. I'm not going to drink today, and I meant it with all my heart and soul.
How'd that work out for you?
Never worked out at all, ever. That night, I was, you know, trolling the dorm, looking for people who had, who didn't. I stumbled in. I found a room where they were doing some drinking, and they had this stuff called Everclear.
Ah, Everclear.
For any of the listeners who do not know what Everclear
is. Green alcohol of the gods.
98% alcohol.
Yeah.
Guaranteed to get you drunk.
And I think you could start a barbecue with that stuff, too. And
highly flammable, yeah. Yes.
Heat a home, run a car on
this, it. This was down south, therefore not illegal. In some states, it actually is illegal. And what they were making with Everclear was strawberry daiquiris.
Ah, delightful.
Why is that important? Yes, it is one step below Zima, you know. But
all you need now is like little umbrellas in your glasses, and you're on your way, man. What's with the daiquiris?
Aside from alcohol cats, the other thing that I'm strongly allergic to is strawberries.
Okay.
Eating a strawberry is like playing Russian roulette for me.
Mm.
If I eat too many, if I eat strawberries at all, I'm guaranteed to break out in hives.
Okay.
If I eat too much, you know, I may have trouble breathing. Not good. You know, last time I checked, breathing is necessary to live.
Mm-hmm.
However, they're making strawberry daiquiris with something that is guaranteed to get me drunk. And the thing that goes through my head is, well, I've never had that before.
Hmm.
I ask for a couple shots. I'm told, no, we're only making strawberry daiquiris. If you'd like it, you're going to have strawberry daiquiris also made with real strawberries. The insanity of alcoholism and the lack of choice that comes in drinking for an alcoholic, is that what crosses my mind is, well, okay, if you say so.
Mm.
The thought of, I'm definitely going to get hives, and I may not be able to breathe after this experience does not enter my mind. The thought of that I'm going to get drunk and I'm going to try something new, that's in the forefront of my mind. You know, what is in my best interests does not enter the picture when it comes to drinking. And I drank that night, and I woke up the next morning covered in hives. Now, because I'm waking up in my own bed, you know, being able to breathe, everything's okay.
Mm.
And it was just another good night, and wow, that Everclear is good stuff.
Mm.
Did not have to drink too much and got one of the best nights drinking ever.
So how old are you then?
Then I was 18.
18 years old.
Yes.
So at 18 years old, you're already drinking irresponsibly. You're already drinking with complete disregard for your health.
That is correct.
Okay, and you don't really care about your well-being at all.
My well-being or anybody else's for that matter. I was drinking a grand total of probably 1, maybe 1.5 months in college when the first person who cared about me enough to confront me about my drinking told me, Matt, we think you're an alcoholic. You know, they didn't want to call me an alcoholic, actually. They just said, Matt, we like you when you're not drinking, but when you drink, you become a different person, and we really don't like being around you.
Huh. So
they didn't call me an alcoholic, but what they were doing was taking my drinking and putting it in the forefront and making me different than them.
Right.
Very uncomfortable feeling.
Who was that person?
That was my friend. It's my friend's wife now, but it was his girlfriend at the time.
Okay. That takes some courage.
Yeah, it definitely did. You know, later in sobriety, when I was to speak with them, I thanked her, and I wished at the time it had meant more to me.
Mm.
But at that time, like I said, it kind of put my drinking in the forefront as a problem, and nobody likes to hear that. Nobody who's got a drinking problem likes to be set apart.
So what did you do about it?
Because,
well, let me back you up. Before we get into what you did about it, we know...
I didn't do anything at that point.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it didn't feel too good to hear, mm-hmm. Okay? Did you think there was a kernel of truth to it?
I knew there was deep down inside. That's why it made me uncomfortable.
Okay. Okay.
It had crossed my mind plenty of times that my drinking is not normal, but under those conditions, when it comes to, you know, drinking, it still has its good points to it.
Mm.
You know, and I would continue.
So what'd you do?
I told her where she could go, and I was kind enough to give her directions. You know.
Okay.
And I gave my, you know, and here's the funny thing about, you know, how important I think I am. You know, I told my friend that he was to either choose to hang out with me, you know, or he's going to hang out with his girlfriend. Which one was it going to be? And I was very surprised when he chose her. You know, I thought I was such a nice guy to be around and, you know, all sorts of fun.
Right, right.
Everybody else saw me for what I really was, a drunken mess.
Mm.
My drinking, you know, went in through college, but, you know, 9 o'clock classes and drinking don't mix. And I made the wise decision that, you know, college would not be the best thing for me because, like I said, I discovered this thing that was, you know, great and I could feel, you know, awesome. So I became a college dropout at the age of 18 also.
Okay.
You know, my entire future, I know what's best for me, just kind of flushed it down the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And dropped out of college and spent the next year, you know, like it started with my friend's girlfriend. But the last relationships that ever went down the toilet were my own family.
Okay.
Because now I was living back under their roof, and they had certain rules that they would like me to abide by that just kind of went out the window. Because when it comes to my drinking and my personal safety and or yours, drinking would always went out. And I became one of those people that I knew deep down inside have a drinking problem because I found myself drinking alone. All my friends went... I used to hang out with people who were in college and getting educated. Towards the end of my drinking, I was hanging around with people who had rap sheets, you know, who were on parole, and or, you know, I would just hang out with nobody.
Mm.
And drinking was the most important thing in my life, and it was the thing that dictated what I was going to do that night, what I wasn't going to do. And I was just, you know, I was on the verge of getting fired from a retail job. I was on the verge of getting thrown out of my house. I was on a... No girls would ever stick around long enough to be called ex-girlfriends. And I was just, I had absolutely nothing going for me. And my scorecard was, you know, reading zero.
What's the chronology on this descent? I mean, what are we talking? How many years between 19 and your first drink?
I only drank for 2 years.
2 years. And you found, yeah. And you found that kind of bottom.
Yep. Between drinks and drugs, it took, you know, 2 years to take my entire life and flush it down the toilet with absolutely no way out that I could think of.
That's amazing.
If I could think of a way out, I had tried that way, and it hadn't worked because I was still rock bottom in the toilet.
So what was the event or events that took you to take some action on getting well?
The event that took place was, much like Jim said, you know, I had relatives, you know, who were alcoholics, so I knew the bottom that one could go to, and I always use the rationale of I'm too young and I'm not as bad as.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I was sitting around and I just had this moment of clarity where alcoholism is a progressive illness. I may not be a total loser now, and my drinking may not be as bad as theirs, but I've got plenty of time to catch up to them if I'm lucky enough to live that long.
Mm-hmm.
So my bottom pretty much was an emotional one.
Okay.
You know, I was 19 years old, so I didn't have much to say, like, I've lost a wife, I've lost a job, I've, you know, crashed 7 cars, you know, whatever. My bottom was was more of an emotional one.
So what'd you do?
I had met someone that was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I reached out to that individual for some type of assistance.
Mm-hmm. And what happened?
They took me to a few meetings, you know, and introduced me to other members of Alcoholics Anonymous who claimed that they had a way out of the life that I was in. And the thing that really turned me on about AA, much like Jim said, was the identification that I had with them. They were talking about my problems, but they were talking about them in a past tense.
Okay. And you've been fortunate enough to be there ever since?
Yep. First time around, when I followed directions, I'm all right.
Fantastic. Matt, thanks for sharing with us. This is America's 12-Step Radio Show. This is Steppin' Out.